Hello, and welcome to episode 14 of the History of Yugoslav Football podcast. Generations. In the last episode, we covered who would play in the first proper championship post-war from a club perspective, and Tito's consolidation of power as he transitioned from army uniform to tailored suit. This was a new Yugoslavia, but at least some of the players on the pitch were familiar, as teams were made up of what sometimes seemed an uncomfortable mix of pre- and post-war Yugoslavia. For example, the first season's top scorer was Franjo Vulful. International in 1938, top scorer in the Croatian League during the war. Dinamo's first ever scorer was similarly pre-war. Ivan Mudaric began his career in the top tier of Yugoslav football in 1932, was press-ganged into NAK Novi Sad's Ušpesti AC during the war, changing his name to Ivan Mezes, left that club to fight for the Partisans, and then ended up at Dinamo. These pre-war holdovers were part of Yugoslav football for some time. The first national team not to feature a player who had been capped prior to the war didn't come until 1949. It's also very important to point out that the treatment of footballers who had played in these wartime leagues and their rapid rehabilitation to resume their careers was in stark contrast to some of the treatment ordinary citizens who had done similar in their own careers received. The first season was the first chance to see many things that still matter very much today. The 1st of September 1946 saw the first ever game between Sfina Zvezda and Dinamo, finishing 1-0 to Dinamo. And a week later, the 8th of September, saw the first Croatian Eternal Derby as Hajduk defeated Dinamo 1-0 in Zagreb. The 5th of January 1947 would see the first Serb Eternal Derby as Sfina Zvezda defeated Partizan 4-3. As such, it's probably a good time to stop for a second and pause to mention what exactly an Eternal Derby is, because there's a lot of them, and they will crop up quite a bit during our timeline given that they are, almost without fail, really important. There are six in the region all in all, and because of the similarity in languages throughout the region, all of them have similar names. As such, for ease of use and so as not to accidentally say things in the wrong language and offend everyone, I'm going to refer to them all just as the Eternal Derby of the region in which it takes place, save to run them all through right now. In Bosnia-Herzegovina, we'll see the Eternal Derby between FK Sarajevo and Zvezdnikar, which is otherwise known as the Vjesiti Derby. That's V-J-E-C-I-T-I, or alternatively, the Sarajevski Derby. But this particular derby will only begin in 1954. Croatia's, as indicated previously, is between Dinamo and Hajduk, and is alternately known as either the Vjesni Derby, that's V-J-E-C-N-I, or the Hvatski Derby. Both of these editions in the first season will be won by Hajduk. As we progress, we'll see that more or less every game in Croatia is a derby of some sort, particularly when we reach the 1990s. Montenegro's Eternal Derby is between Ceska and Budućnost, albeit this is far more commonly known as the Montenegrin Derby or, in the appropriate language, the Crnogorski Derby, as the beginning of their rivalry predates anything called Eternal, beginning as it did in 1932. North Macedonia's is the Vechno Derby, that's V-E-C-H-N-O, techno but with a V, between Vardar and Pelista, but this derby doesn't start until 1990, and is more related to the fact that the fans can't stand each other, as opposed to there being an actual competitive rivalry on the pitch. Serbia's Vesiti Derby, V-E-C-I-C-I, is more than others simply known as the Derby. And anyone looking for highlights of the game can just put the word Derby, D-E-R-B-I, into YouTube with a number lower than 162 and they'll find them. It is, of course, between Sfenas Fiesta and Partizan, and is perhaps thought of as the greatest rivalry in all of football. This first season's games were split between the sides, with Jovan Jozerkic scoring a hat-trick in Derby 1, one of only three players to actually score in the Derby for both clubs. Finally, Slovenia has the Vecni Derby, V-E-C-N-I, between Olympia and Maribor. Albeit, before I get Slovenian hate mail, it's really worth noting that this is two distinct derbies. The first between 1962 and 2004, and the second from 2007 onwards due to the bankruptcy of Olympia in 2005. It is, in essence, a bit like the Old Firm derby in Glasgow, in that, in spite of one half of the rivalry going out of existence legally, most just sort of ignore that and have the derby carry on regardless, primarily for marketing purposes. That first season of the Yugoslav League was predictably uneven. In Partizan, Sfenas Fiesta, Dinamo and Hajduk, it had four sides who had a natural advantage. One already existed as the nation's one of the nation's preeminent sides, and the other three were gifted the playing staff and infrastructure of the ones who had been taken apart. The gap between them and the rest was obvious, and the gap between Partizan and the remainder was equally obvious as the army side won the first title with ease. Those that remained were a mix of smaller sides who had gotten where they were in part simply out of surviving and who were naturally small sides. Slovenia's representative in that first season, Nafta Lendava, for example, didn't even complete the season, and there was many a hammering. Most notably, in Partizan's 10-1 win over 14 October Nice, which featured a quite ridiculous 9 goals in the game from Stjepan Bobek. The Yugoslav Cup, which prior to World War II was an uncomfortable mix of a normal cup and just games between regional select 11s, was revived as the Marshall Tito Cup and became the sort of straight knockout tournament between clubs that it would remain and that one would have expected in the first place. At this point, however, it would take place in a schedule that one would associate nowadays with something like the Scottish League Cup, in so much as it was done by Christmas. As such, when we present this first season's Partizan side as also the first double winners, it's important to note that while the league was won in July 1947, the cup wasn't actually won until November 1947. As such, the argument could easily be made that this double didn't really count, given that the cup actually came during the following league season. At the bottom of the league in the first season, things were complicated as five sides were relegated so as to bring the league down to 10. However, Ponciana, the token political prisoners from Italy, would have been one of the sides relegated. For a Yugoslav government that really wanted to make clear that its claims on Trieste were entirely legitimate, this simply would not do. And as such, Ponciana were kept in the league for the following season. This claim over Trieste would carry on until the shared governance zone, similar to pre-Berlin Wall Berlin, around the city would end in 1954, with Trieste returning to Italy and Yugoslavia getting the region just south of it, including the port of Koper, whose team we'll have plenty of opportunity to talk about when we get to Slovenian independence. Below the first tier, there was a regularly changing and regularly confusing mishmash of formats. For the first season, it was familiar in so much as it was a pre-war hangover of regional competitions, feeding into a champion of regional champions playoff won by Torpedo, whom I'm sure no one is going to mind me referring to as FK Sarajevo from now on, given that they took the name only a couple of years later. Their promotion was also, in its own way, utterly bizarre. The club itself had actually been formed mid-season after a merger between local clubs Jedanik and Sloboda. FK Sarajevo took over the players from both sides and the league position of Jedanik, and included two players who would in future be around the national side in Lav Manchula and the tragic Djuka Lovric, who died at only 30. The second season of the league would retain that Big Four nature, albeit with Lokomotiva interloping ahead of Sfina Zvezda, with Dinamo winning the league ahead of Hajduk and Partizan, who were separated on goal ratio. Goal ratio being goals scored divided by goals conceded, meaning that there was a serious advantage in having a good defence. Dinamo were fired to the title by the goals of Franjo Velfl, perhaps the player whose career was most obscured by his peak coming during World War II, having scored 13 and 18 for Stasi Croatia's national side, but then seeing his status as the region's preeminent striker taken away by the likes of Bobek and Matic almost as soon as the gunfire stopped. In that second season, Ponciano would stay in the league on merit rather than because of shenanigans, with FK Sarajevo, Spartak Subotica and Vardar being relegated to the second tier, which for the next four seasons would be a proper national league all by itself. Coming up for the next season would be Budućnost Titograd, Sloga Novi Sad, who are, of course, far, far better known as Vojvodina, and Nasa Krila Zemun. While Partizan were the army club, Nasa Krila were the air force club, literally meaning our wings Zemun. But perhaps the most notable thing going on may have been related to the national side. They were ready to go back to their first international tournament, the 1948 Olympics, and their preparations were ideal. With the legends in charge of Milorad Arsenijevic and Aleksandar Tinanic, they'd only lost one game in 2 years and finished 1947 with a 7-1 hammering of Poland in Belgrade. It was time for Yugoslavia to show themselves to the world once more and enter perhaps one of their greatest areas of national team success. Next time on the podcast, we go headlong into this silver age of Yugoslav football and start our look at the international tournaments that would be the height of Yugoslavia's achievements. 1948 is here, and it's going to be very important. Thank you for listening, and I will see you next time.